Support for WERU comes from Easterly Wine of Belfast, Maine, an independent enterprise that supports free speech, democracy, and independent media.
And this is Community Radio, WERU-FM, 89.9 Blue Hill, 99.9 Bangor, and streaming online everywhere at weru.org. This is the WERU News Report for Tuesday, October 15th, 2013. I'm Amy Brown. Last week, the ACLU of Maine presented Ann Luther of the League of Women Voters of Maine with the annual Baldwin Award, citing her, quote, outstanding commitment to defending and expanding voting rights in Maine, end quote. In her acceptance speech, Ann Luther drew parallels between the work of the ACLU and the League of Women Voters and between present-day efforts to protect voters' rights and past struggles to secure them. She was introduced by Secretary of State Matt Dunlap, who was in turn introduced by Susan Peck, the Vice President of the Board of the Maine ACLU.
The ACLU of Maine Award is named for Roger Baldwin, who was an ardent activist for social justice and helped found the ACLU. He served as its director until 1950, and during his tenure, the ACLU played a key role in many civil liberties cases, including the Scopes Monkey Trial, where Tennessee officials challenged the teaching of evolution, as well as the infamous case of Massachusetts versus Sacco and Vanzetti. Baldwin remained active in the civil liberties world until his death in 1981. Among his many achievements, he was tapped by General Douglas MacArthur to travel to Japan, where he helped ensure the protection of civil liberties in that country. The Baldwin Award, as you know, is presented annually to a group or activist that has made a distinguished contribution to the protection and promotion of civil liberties in Maine. We all understand how important voting rights are here in Maine, and that's why it is so wonderful for us tonight to have someone who has devoted herself to protecting and advancing voting rights in Maine. And we're also very pleased to have Secretary of State Matthew Dunlap with us to introduce our 2013 Baldwin Award and honoree Ann Luther. Not surprisingly, for those of you who know him, Secretary Dunlap was himself a Baldwin Award honoree in 2008, receiving the award alongside Senator Libby Mitchell and Representative Scott Lansley for opposing the Intrusive Real ID Act on driver's license requirements. Secretary Dunlap has stood with us and the League of Women Voters as a respected and committed ally for expanding and defending voting rights in our states. He's enthusiastically endorsed early voting, drawing on the success of an early voting pilot program he commissioned as Secretary of State in 2009. He's passionately defended same-day voter registration and continues to assure that the Office of the Secretary of State works in every way to facilitate Mainers' rights to exercise their voting rights. Please give a warm welcome to Secretary Dunlap.
They usually applaud when I leave, but thank you for that. It was one of the highlights of my service as the 47th Secretary of State to be a recipient of the Roger Baldwin Award. And the work that I've been able to do over the years with Ann Luther and the ACLU and the League of Women Voters and many other committed organizations has been really an incredible journey and a great education, tremendous experience. And it is, I get some cachet out of being out there as Secretary of State, traveling around the state on Election Day and talking about the importance of voting and the importance of voter registration and the importance of exercising the franchise, because, you know, I have fairly high political office, and I get my name in the newspaper quite a bit, and I'll walk into a building, and people I don't even know say, good morning, Mr. Secretary. And it's not my identity, but it is something that I think is, you get that sort of validation, if you will. And so it sort of speaks to the commitment of someone like Ann, because I know I've been to Ann's meetings, you know, on Sunday afternoon in the middle of nowhere with no press coverage. And she is out there reaching out to people, trying to convey the importance of their voting rights. And she has never, in my experience, ever stood up and said that this is an issue that's important to women voters. It's important to voters, to Maine voters. And, you know, that's relatively striking considering that she comes from the League of Women Voters. And her commitment to the right of people to cast their ballots unimpeded by superfluous barriers is really so deep. And I'll tell maybe one or two Ann Luther stories. There are very, very few things that are completely within my discretion as the Secretary of State. One of them is the drafting of ballot questions. God help me if I use completely my own discretion to do that. And I have made exhaustive use of an organization that we call the Volunteer Ballot Clarity Advisory Committee, an organization that most people have never heard of. And, you know, we get together. I have to sort of qualify this a little bit. I worked for many years as a cook in this very building. And while I was cooking downstairs, what used to be the main kitchen, I was a graduate student here at the university in English. And the other cooks would laugh at me and they'd say, well, what do you do with an English degree anyway? And I look back on that, you know, years later as we were parsing out the use of the word may versus must, and thought, this is what you do with an English degree. we had a ballot question. The way we would work this, you see, is we'd send out, you know, sample question by email to this illustrious group of people who take time out of their day to sit on a conference call for an hour or two and, you know, kick all this stuff around. It would include a college professor in English, and another college professor in political science, a town clerk, a high school English teacher, and Ann Luther from the League of Women Voters. And there was a ballot question. We were going to pull together the conference call, and Ann called and said, I cannot be a part of this. Our organization has taken a position on this legislation. Now, as I mentioned, almost no one has heard of the Ballot Clarity Advisory Committee. And there's in no way any doubt in my mind that the work that Ann would have brought to that question would have been completely unimpeachable. But nonetheless, no one was ever going to say that Ann Luther had her thumb on the scale. And that's, I think, a demonstration of her personal commitment to the integrity of the franchise, which makes my life a lot easier when I get to work with somebody like Ann. So, you know, the work that we went shared when I was kind of walking through sort of a two-year valley of political death on Election Day registration, you know, it was tough. It was lonely because, you know, there's these compelling arguments about, you know, it's just a very simple change. Very simple change. And the voter ID law that was proposed, I mean, who has really a problem with just proving that you are who you say you are? And it's so simple. And it has such a nice song that goes along with it. Who could ever be opposed? And, you know, we are out in the world trying to assure people that this is an affirmative right that belongs to them. And Ann was a true, tireless leader in that effort. And without her, I'm not sure we would have done as well as we did. And that's really important. And how important it is what we take for granted. And we talk about the League of Women Voters. And it's been almost 100 years that women have had the right to vote. My grandmother and great-grandmother marched for suffrage, were jailed. Hard to contemplate today. And, you know, you tell school kids this, they're like, what? What are you talking about? And the right to vote is not something that we can just simply enshrine in a constitution or write into a statute and then say, now we're done. It requires constant vigilance. Last year, my mother gave me a book on, it's a classic book written by Cicero. entitled How to Win an Election. And only about halfway through it by the primary, I probably would have been well served to finish the book. It is a similar, you know, similar theme to Machiavelli's Advice to the Prince. And, you know, these are people who are considered to be the foremost authorities on the formation, development, and use of political power, even in our time. But because of people like my great-grandmother and Clara Barton and their successors, people like Janet Mills, Ann Luther, and many people in this room, we know something now with great certainty that they had no inkling of. That women can vote. That women can not only vote, but they can hold positions of authority and not be held up as great women, but as great leaders. And that is an inheritance that my daughter now will take forward, not even knowing where it came from, because of the quiet work done on Sunday afternoons in remote areas all over the state by Ann Luther, who I am not only privileged to be a part of this tonight, but to call her my friend and colleague, because without her work, I am nothing. So thank you, Ann, so much, and congratulations on that.
I wish they could be here tonight. Told me to put a rubber band on my wrist so that I wouldn't cry. I may cry anyway. Thank you. I want to thank Matt for that kind introduction. He was funny. I'm not going to be funny. But Edward asked me to try to hold my remarks to about 10 minutes. And so that's kind of what I've got, is about 10 minutes. And I hope you bear with me, because I have some very heartfelt things that I wanted to say to you all tonight. So first of all, words cannot express really how honored I am to receive the ACLU of Maine's Baldwin Award. When I look at the list of past recipients and reflect on all that they've accomplished, I am truly humbled and feel like I'm going to have to get up tomorrow morning and work just a little bit harder to be worthy of the honor that you've bestowed on me tonight. I love the ACLU, and your never give an inch defense of civil liberties. You are so uncompromising in your support for the Bill of Rights that you'll stand up for anyone, including the extremists and the outliers, and I love that. I don't agree with every position that you take. I do agree with most, but not everyone. But I'll tell you what, I sleep better at night knowing that you're alert and vigilant on the job for us all. So thank you very much. The ACLU has been a great partner in the work for voting rights and elections. Here in Maine, you have professional, principled, persevering staff, talented staff, and counting myself a member, it has been so gratifying to see ACLU of Maine getting stronger and stronger each year. We are so lucky to have you. All the work that I've done that brought me here tonight was done as a volunteer for the League of Women Voters. As it has for so many people over the years, the League of Women Voters gave me the opportunity, provided me the tools, and let me use its legendary name as a platform for my own civic engagement. As an ordinary citizen and a volunteer, I'm an example of the fulfillment of the League's mission. I was encouraged to become informed and to participate. I learned about the public policy issues that I wanted to work on. I had a chance to influence public policy myself, and I'm so grateful to the League for that opportunity. I'm touched beyond measure to see so many friends and colleagues here tonight from not only the ACLU, from the League of Women Voters, from Maine Citizens for Clean Elections, from the Maine Center for Public Interest Reporting. Thank you all so much for coming. And thanks to all of you who have been so generous with your expertise, your support, your encouragement over the years, and even tonight. Working alongside you has been a great privilege and a great joy, and I look forward to turning the page and doing it again tomorrow. Did you know that the ACLU and the League of Women Voters were founded in the same year? Both took their modern form and their current name in 1920. Both were founded on the extension of rights and the protection of our Constitution to a broader constituency. Both were founded in the name of a truer democracy. For the League, it was voting rights for women. For the ACLU, it was free speech rights for anti-war protesters and labor activists. Today, both organizations are often called liberal, but in many ways, in many important ways, both are truly and deeply conservative, more tradition-bound and slow to change than many on today's political right. We both still work for a more inclusive democracy, a more inclusive polity, with equal protection and equal opportunity for all, and we've been doing the same thing for almost 100 years. In the League of Women Voters, as Matt said, our essential heritage is connected to those women who fought over three generations for the right to vote. I am among the first generation of women in my own family, born into an America where that right was unquestioned. My own grandmother, born in 1882, was a 38-year-old mother of five before she was allowed to vote for the first time. We are separated from that struggle by only two short generations. In the League of Women Voters, that history is alive. We know those women, and our cultural memory stretches back to the time when we were the ones deemed unworthy of the franchise. We know that it's been a struggle, spanning over two centuries since the founding of the American democracy for the broad, inclusive swath of American people to claim this democracy for their own. From the elimination of property qualifications for white men, through the abolition of suffrage qualifications based on race, to granting women the right to vote, outlawing poll taxes and literacy tests, and finally, extending the franchise to anyone old enough to serve in our armed forces. Alas, almost 100 years after the founding of the League of Women Voters and of the ACLU, and despite so much progress, the inclusive democracy for which we work still faces very serious 21st century challenges. The fight for an inclusive franchise is one front in this battle that our two organizations share. Here in Maine, we were successful in saving same-day registration and in preventing a photo ID requirement to vote. We have narrowly prevailed in protecting voting rights for incarcerated felons. And while voting rights for students are safe for now, okay, we know that they may yet come under renewed assault. We work to protect the voting rights of all these and more because we started out fighting for the voting rights of those women who were considered too neurotic or too irrational to vote responsibly. We work today to protect the voting rights of the wrongdoers, the undermotivated, the poorly educated, and the ill-informed. Yes, even these. We know that once you allow it to be permissible to nip here and tuck there based on whatever criteria of worthiness you care to devise, it's hard to stop until you've achieved a purity of vision, a perfect electorate that eliminates all the inconvenient demographic bumps, lumps, and wrinkles. It becomes too easy to sculpt an electorate that agrees exactly with you, and then you have a system in which the politicians select the voters rather than the one in which the voters elect the politicians. Over the last few years, we have seen an unprecedented and coordinated assault on voting rights around the country with exactly this in mind. And here in Maine, we are fortunate to have prevailed so far, but we must never stand down. We are all diminished, and our democracy is diminished if we tolerate the abridgment of voting rights for a few. This is not a partisan issue. Those who believe in democracy and who believe in their fellow citizens want everyone's voice to be heard through their vote. But that's the essential question, isn't it? Do we really believe in majority rule? Do we really believe in our fellow citizens? Do we believe in their right to vote even when we disagree with them? Some who call themselves patriots love their country, love the American character, love their way of life, but may not really love democracy, not when it is so broadly inclusive as to give voting rights to people that they distrust or despise. Over the course of our history, neither party has had an exclusive license on vote rigging and election manipulation. Both political parties and powerful individuals from both sides of the political spectrum have been and are willing to twist the rules of democracy to get what they want, be it power or policy, who are willing to silence the votes or drown out the voices of their opponents to achieve by coercion and manipulation what they cannot achieve by persuasion. For me, I just want things to be fair. I remember as a little girl sharing a candy bar with my two sisters. I was the oldest, the bossiest, so I got to hold the knife. And I cut the candy bar up into three pieces. Of course, one was bigger than the others. And being the oldest, I took the biggest one for myself. My sisters called foul, naturally, brought in mom, and mother made it pretty clear that it wasn't fair for the biggest, bossiest one to rig the deal, so that if I was allowed to cut the candy bar, I had to let my sisters have first choice of the pieces. And that made sure that I cut those pieces fair and square. That still seems to me to be a pretty good lesson. I don't want those with extraordinary wealth or power to carve up public policy either. And I don't want them to stick everyone else with the smallest piece. I don't want a democracy that is dominated by the wealthy and powerful few and the electorate that they choose to suit their own purposes. That's not really democracy. But today, the wealthy and the powerful do have their thumbs on the scale of democracy. Thanks to generations of sustained and coordinated effort by a cadre of well-funded foundations, think tanks, and nonprofits, we have seen the growth of an unquestioning belief in free market capitalism result in significant deregulation of our financial system and the accumulation of a vast rent-seeking fortunes in the hands of a few, a very, very few. Don't get me wrong, I believe in capitalism, and I believe in free enterprise. I even believe that economic opportunity and political agency go hand in hand. I'm not against people getting rich, and I'm not against rich people having their say. But the job of government is to provide just the right amount of regulation to protect us from the vast accumulation of wealth and power sufficient to constrain liberty for the rest. And with deregulation, we now have more wealth and income disparity in this country than any time in the last century. Research at the federal level shows that legislators and policymakers are vastly more attentive to the interests of their donors than they are to those of ordinary voters. Although we each get one vote, and we know that some of us have a hard time hanging on to even that, we are not all represented with the same vigor. Affluent donors give more to political campaigns, and their interests are more likely to get policy results. In other words, affluent donors get what they want. Ordinary voters get what we want when and only when we happen to want what those affluent donors also want. When big moneyed interests spend in political campaigns, they create a feedback loop in public policy that further advantages their own interests, deepening the chasm between themselves and ordinary people. Today, some of these interests are working for preservation of a system under which the few are free to exert as much power as they can accumulate against the rights of the many to get the public policy benefits that their narrow interests and beliefs require. Wealthy ideological donors use their money to buy lobbying, election outcomes, gerrymandering, and a surgically altered electorate. The rest of us, meanwhile, seem helpless to pivot our public policy in a constructive direction. American democracy is failing to serve the needs of the majority of its citizens, and I say this today against the backdrop of our entire federal government held hostage to the extreme views of a radical minority. While our highest court, just at the beginning of this week, heard a case about giving yet more power in elections to wealthy ideologues in the name of further deregulating the marketplace of free speech. So, for the sake of a functioning democracy, we the people must continue to push back on money in politics. It's the issue of our generation. Publicly financed elections are part of the solution. They are one possible reform that remains practical and constitutional in the 21st century. I am so pleased this year that the ACLU of Maine endorsed public financing of elections. Welcome to the front. It's a continuation of the struggle that our two organizations began almost 100 years ago and have renewed in each generation since for an inclusive democracy with equal protection and equal opportunity for all. This may be a never-ending endeavor, one that will continue for generations to come, but we can't afford to give up. Thank you for joining us in that fight. And thank you for being here tonight.
That was Ann Luther of the League of Women Voters of Maine accepting the 2013 Baldwin Award from the ACLU of Maine last week. And that was recorded by Matt Murphy. I'm Amy Brown. Join us here every Tuesday and Wednesday afternoon at 4:30 for the WERU News Report, independent local news made possible with your support here on your community radio station, WERU-FM.
This is Community Radio, WERU-FM, 89.9 Blue Hill and 99.9 in Bangor. Here's a quick look at the National Weather Service forecast for the greater